One year, during harvest, my grip on the scythe seemed weak, the tips of my fingers numb. First one finger, and then another. And within a short time, I could grip the tool, but could scarcely feel it. And by the end of the season, I felt nothing at all. The hand grasping the handle might as well belong to someone else. The feeling was gone. I said nothing to my wife, but I know she suspected something. How could she not? I carried my hand against my body like a wounded bird. One afternoon, I plunged my hands into a basin of water intending to wash my face. The water reddened. My finger was bleeding and bleeding freely. I didn't even know I was wounded. How did I cut myself? On a knife? Did my hand slide across the sharp edge of metal? I must have, but I didn't feel anything. "It's on your clothes too," my wife said softly. She was behind me. Before looking at her, I looked down at the crimson spots on my robe. For the longest time, I stood over the basin staring at my hand. Somehow I knew my life was forever being altered. "Shall I go with you to tell the priest?" she asked. "No," I sighed. "I'll go alone." I turned and I looked into her moist eyes. Standing next to her was our 3-year-old daughter. Squatting, I gazed into her face, stroked her cheek, saying nothing. What could I say? I stood and looked again at my wife. She touched my shoulder, and with my good hand, I touched hers. It would be our final touch. The priest, he didn't touch me. He looked at my hand, now wrapped in a rag. He looked at my face, now shadowed in sorrow. I've never faulted him for what he said. He was only doing as he was instructed. He covered his mouth and extended his palm forward. "You are unclean," he told me. And with one pronouncement, I lost my family, my farm, my future, my friends. My wife met me at the city gates with a sack of clothing, bread, and coins. She didn't speak. And by now, friends had gathered. What I saw in their eyes was a precursor to what I'd seen in every eye since. Fearful pity. As I stepped out, they stepped back. Their horror of my disease was greater than their concern for my heart. So they, and everyone else since, has stepped back. In our gospel reading for this morning, we encounter Jesus healing 10 people from a dreadful and most likely fatal disease. I chose to begin this sermon with this fictional story because I think that it is most helpful this morning if we can place ourselves inside of this gospel reading as much as possible. As I begin to study and to meditate on this passage, 3 questions quickly arose. The first one is this, and it's probably the most obvious question, but I began to ask, why did 9 lepers, all 10 were healed, but why did 9 lepers neglect to return to Jesus and offer thanksgiving for being healed? The second question is this, why did only 1 leper return to Jesus to offer thanksgiving? What was different about this 1 leper? And third, if I were one of these lepers, what would I have done? And I do not intend to provide sufficient answers for these questions in this sermon, especially the last one. Who knows what I would have done? I only hope to encourage us on this Thanksgiving Day to fully enter into the presence of God, recognizing the great work He has done for us on the cross through Christ. So what about these 9 lepers? Why did they neglect to return to give thanksgiving? It might be helpful for us to have a better understanding of their physical and emotional condition. The following is from Smith's Bible Dictionary. It says this about leprosy. It begins with specks on the eyelids and on the palms, gradually spreading over the whole body, bleaching the hair white wherever they appear, crusting the affected parts with scales and causing terrible sores and swellings. From the skin, the disease eats inward to the bones, rotting the whole body piece by piece. In Christ's day, no leper could live in a walled town, though he might in an open village. But wherever he was required to have his outer garment rent as a sign of deep grief, to go bareheaded and to cover his beard with his mantle, as if in lamentation of his own virtual death. He had further to warn passersby to keep away from him by calling out, "Unclean, unclean." Nor could he speak to anyone or receive or return a salutation, since in the East this involved an embrace. And I read this not to depress us or to disgust you, but so that we can have the best possible understanding of what these 10 people were delivered from. They were delivered not simply from a painful and grotesque disease. It was definitely that. But they were also delivered from a horrid lifestyle of ostracism and humiliation. And I believe that the 9 who did not return to give thanks, I believe that these people were thankful people. When you think about it, in one single moment, their entire lives were changed. As they turned to go to the priest, it says that they were healed. They could now go back to their communities, back to work, back to their families. They no longer had to live life on the outside. So in my mind, I believe they were thankful. But it seems as if Luke is trying to communicate to us in this passage that there is a difference between being thankful and actively directing our feelings of thanksgiving to God, from whom all blessings flow. C.J. Mahaney, whom I credit the story that I read at the beginning of the sermon, said these words: "All gifts from God are intended to direct our attention to God and create fresh affections for God." In Mere Christianity, C.S. Lewis quotes Samuel Johnson with the following words. He says, "People need to be reminded more often than they need to be instructed." People need to be reminded more often than they need to be instructed. And I believe this quote is especially fitting for a Thanksgiving sermon, because we know that we as the people of God are to be thankful people. But it is also true that we as the people of God can easily slip into periods, seasons of ingratitude by either forgetting how good God has been to us, or by becoming distracted by his many blessings. And I get the sense that this is what the people of God were being warned of in our Old Testament reading. A few moments ago, we read these words. It began with, "For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land." And the passage goes on to describe how good that land was. And then here comes the warning. It says, when you have eaten and are satisfied, praise the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. And be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his decrees that I'm giving you this day. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, when you build fine houses and settle down, when you have herds and flocks, when they grow large and your silver and gold increase, and all you have is multiplied, then your heart will become proud, and you will forget the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery." Now back to our gospel reading. This one leper who did not forget, who did not neglect to return to give thanks for being healed. We must ask, what made him different? What made him return to give thanks? Many of you already know this, and those of you who did not probably knew by the time that I started talking that I'm not from around here. But I'm in good company because we know from our passage that neither was this one leper. Luke makes it very clear to us that he was a foreigner, specifically a Samaritan. Which leads us to believe that the other lepers, the other nine, were not. It's as if Luke is making the point that the others who were most likely Jews, also known as the people of God, should have known better. We also know about this leper that he possessed faith. And it was his faith that led him back into the presence of Christ. Normally when I receive a gift and I thank someone, I shake their hand or possibly hug them. And if it's most appropriate, I write a thank you note. But notice this leper's response. He returned shouting. He threw himself at the feet of Jesus. His response of thanksgiving was also one of worship. Or you could say his response of worship was also one of thanksgiving. He did not simply feel thankful. His faith led him into the presence of the giver, where he appropriately acknowledged him in an act of worship. And all throughout the scriptures, we see glory, praise, thanksgiving. These words seem to go hand in hand. And especially in Paul's writings, the terms praise and thanksgiving are pretty much synonymous. And when we think upon what God has done for us, not just this day, but every day, it is most appropriate to direct our thanksgivings to him in the form of worship. A few weeks ago, I found myself greatly discouraged and overwhelmed. As a family, we became increasingly busy as we moved from Trinity into an apartment off campus. Because of the move, schoolwork began to pile up. Began to pile up to a point that I began to doubt if I was going to be able to catch up and even finish this semester with a passing grade. And this led me, obviously, to think about the future. If I didn't pass this class, the way it's set up at Trinity, if you get behind, it could turn into, you know, another year before you graduate, which means more money, more late nights studying, and more time away from my family. But after sharing this with my small group as a request for prayer, I honestly believe that God began to do a great work in my heart. And instead of giving me this feeling of being caught up, instead of taking away this overwhelmed feeling that I had, what he gave me was the feeling of being okay with where he has me right now. Overwhelmed, behind. And he showed me that I was so focused on the future that I could not fully enter into what he has for me in the present. And I would guess that I'm probably not the only one who struggles with this temptation. And our congregation is full of students, many people who are at a crossroads, and thinking about the future is a very common thing. But no matter who we are, we all have hopes and dreams and plans of what lies ahead for us. And it's good to think about the future. It's good to have dreams and to make plans. But if we become too focused on what lies ahead, it's possible to miss out on what God is doing in our life right now. We will miss out on the opportunity to enter fully into the presence of the Lord with thanksgiving. That's why a day like today is so important, and a service such as this one is so important. Today we set aside time to enter fully into the presence of God, to worship him with thanksgiving for what he has done, for what he is doing in our lives right now and for the things that he will do. And when you think about it, we're not too different from the 10 lepers in our gospel reading. Each one of us was brought into this world with a spiritual leprosy, diseased by sin with no hope within ourselves for the spiritual cleansing that we so desperately need. Ephesians 2 tells us that we were by nature objects of God's wrath. And Colossians 1 reminds us that we were once alienated from God and were enemies in our minds because of our evil behavior. But, and this is one of those very important scriptural conjunctions, but now he has reconciled us by Christ's physical body through death to present us holy in his sight, without blemish, and free from accusation.